Yeah, it's wonderful to connect with you and to learn more about what you're working on. I listened to your episode on the Rad Season with my friend Oliver, and there you told your story. And I'll actually leave the link in the description for people to listen to it as you talk about how you arrived at the point where you're at today and working on what you're working today. And I think that could be a good starting point for us. What is it that you're doing today and that is alive in you that you're excited about?
Yeah, I've led a very interesting life, a lot of twists and turns, but I've ended up really what I feel like doing my life's work as a mindfulness teacher, teaching meditation and yoga, embodiment practices to mostly people in midlife. Mostly people at midlife, and that's my employment. I am currently located down in Baja, California, in Mexico, and I work at the first of its kind midlife wisdom school called the Modern Elder Academy, but we call it MEA. A really wonderful, wonderful place for people to come in midlife that are looking to change it up a bit. To maybe reacquaint themselves with themselves and really reframing this whole thing of midlife crisis. We clump everything into this like midlife crisis thing. And really what we have started to observe really is it's a midlife opportunity for something new. It isn't necessarily a crisis. It's a transition, you know, and midlife is a very, very juicy time of life. It's not much talked about all the things that we all deal with as we start to enter and even beyond midlife. You have parents that are starting to pass away. You have children that are going off to college. Sometimes it's changing of a career after you've been somewhere for 20 years. Sometimes it's like, what does retirement look like? You know, what will I do with all this time and space on my hands? So as you can see, it's a very, very transitional period in our lives. And it isn't just a crisis. You know, our founder, Chip Connolly, has really tapped into something that's really needed, you know, something that's really needed. And we just offer support and tools to people through these workshops about how to manage a transition or how to like start to create maybe beginner's mind again when you've been a lawyer for 25 years and you kind of embedded in this, like, I kind of know it all, you know, to reacquaint ourselves with our bodies, you know, to reacquaint ourselves with our bodies. We start a family, we start a career. And one of the first things to go is just recognition of this body, of really being in this body, of really taking care of this body. And we touch upon a lot of aspects of just what happens having a human experience, really. And it's been really wonderful. We're getting ready to open a campus in March of next year in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So our home base will be in the States, but we started about 6 years ago down here in Baja, California, and I was dividing my time all the time between Baja and the States.
Super exciting. Super exciting. You know, when you said crisis, I was just on the phone with my mom, and she was talking to me about everything that's happening in the Middle East and just how unnerving things feel and how we just went through a pandemic and that we are in a state of global crisis. But at the same time, some of us are less aware than others, as we have a distance from the global situation, but we all have our own little worlds. And I've definitely been in crisis, and it feels very chaotic. And I guess midlife crisis, especially, or as you called it, midlife opportunity, is something that we all experience, and it seems like an inflection point in our lives. What have you found to be some of the signs that are telling us, whether it's in our body, in our mind, in our behavior, that are telling us that we're entering a time of change that we know as crisis, but from your point of view, it's an opportunity?
Yeah, well, it's something that's deep within that, you know, we have this innate wisdom within us. We have this voice, you know, that's kind of telling us what would be the natural way for us to live, you know. But we live in a culture that kind of tells us the path to go, you know, what we are supposed to do, what is expected of us. And there's not a lot of time in this life for us to look inward and to just see what is really my constitution, you know, what is my makeup, you know. We tend to be looking outwards to be like, okay, yeah, that's the right diet. That's the right diet. I'm going to do that diet, or that's the right workout, or yes, you know, these terminologies that relate to work these days, like I'm going to go grind, you know, I'm going to go get so busy and achieve so much at the detriment of not only my body, but my relationships too. You know, the forward momentum of our culture that we've been born into is very fast. We know how fast it is. We tend to be so far out in front of ourselves from the moment we get up in the morning. You know, we get up and we'll take a peek at this, maybe see an email, and off to the races we go. And, but yet at the same time, there's this little voice in there telling you, like, I need some space, you know, I need to just be, you know. But another thing really happens is that we really start to get addicted to our own busyness, you know. And this is why it becomes very uncomfortable when we start to, consider moving away from an old way of living and into something new. You know, when for us to make a change, we tend to always want a perfect landing pad, a perfect cushy plan to make that move, you know. And yeah, this could be, you know, a job that isn't fulfilling, kind of stay, it's all fear-based too. It's like, you know, staying stuck in a particular type of job, staying stuck in a relationship that isn't very healthy, you know, because it's just, it's what you're used to, so you just put up with it. And it's always kind of waiting for the next thing to go ahead and make some move. But the problem with that is, as long as we're staying with the thing that just isn't working for us, it doesn't really allow us much time and space for something new and fresh to start to emerge, because we're kind of just going. You know, and what we find here at MEA, you know, our workshops are 5 days and 7 days. And what happens is people are flown here. And so they come, most of the time they're coming from another country. They drive down a bunch of bumpy dirt roads and they end up in an environment totally different than their own, you know, and they're just kind of like, what's happening here? You know, the campus itself is utterly beautiful. Chip's background, of course, as most people know, he owned a hotel chain. He was a boutique hotel business and very successful at that. And he's really a hospitality guru. So, and that's why he was also, people know that he was asked to help Airbnb really kind of make Airbnb in the position of having not just come rent my place, but to have this kind of experiential quality to it. So our campus is, you know, hospitality is one of the number one components of it. And that is really just to let people be, to let them know that their meals and the programming, everything that week is going to be provided for them, and that they don't have to really make any decisions. All that they really need to do is just show up, is just to show up and be available and be brave enough to really be vulnerable and honest with yourself about what really isn't working in our lives. And these are hard choices. You know, it could be the end of a 25-year relationship. It could be I was a CEO for 25 years and now I'm not. You know, I was thumped out of my company and I don't know who and what I am. But this whole thing of us being in this constant state of becoming, we tend to forget about this. We really do. Who and what we were just 2 years ago is very different than who and what we are at this moment. You know, and I think you could say that for yourself. You know, we're constantly changing. And this is the thing, you know, we talk about midlife transitions, but the fact that we're always in transition, you know, and we always have been.
Right.
Even the body that you have right now is very different than the body you had 6 months ago, physically, cellularly, you know. And to get back to your point, it's we don't have to be brought to our knees to make some sort of change in our lives, you know. And that comes from some sort of awareness practice can make these transitions a lot easier to really have the time and space to listen to, you know, what is best for Carl? What is best for Teddy? Like, to really develop an intimacy with oneself and to stop kind of listening to the noise of mostly people trying to sell you something. You know, this is the new thing. Keto diet. I only eat carbs. I only eat raw. Well, how about experiment and see what your body makeup is and how you live an optimum life based on like just trying different things and seeing, you know, some people are long distance runners, some people are sprinters, some people are naturally good at numbers, some people thrive in chaotic environments and really good at multitasking, you know, some people feel better being an employee at a library. You know what I mean? Like, what works for the way you're kind of built?
Exactly. And you bring something really interesting up with our culture being almost designed in a way where it's hard to notice that little voice or those moments where we feel like, what is it that we need? And and we all experience these wake-up calls. And in a way, I imagine the anecdote that you share where you retired from skateboarding as one of the original professional skateboarders. You retired from skateboarding just by having a wipeout or a crash that wasn't a severe one, but had you on your back looking up at the sky or at the stars and all of a sudden deciding right there and then that skateboarding was over for you. Yeah. What can we do to help incrementally maybe shift the culture to provide people with the ability and awareness to notice that voice? What are some things that we can do?
Entertain some stillness in our lives, you know, to know that we are actually, I'm not talking about religion or anything like that, and I have no problem with anybody's faith or anything like that at all, but to know that we are spiritual beings, you know, to, you know, you and I are sitting here having this conversation, and at the same time, this body is breathing itself. It's digesting our food that we had for breakfast. Our eyes and our sensory organs are all working at the same time. The liver is cleansing our blood. Like, all of these things are happening at this moment when you and I are having this this conversation and how, you know, scientifically we can explain how this is happening, but does it really, really tell us what's happening? Like, what is happening right now really, truly is a miracle. I don't know any other way to explain it except to have a human experience, to have the opportunity to be alive in a body at this time with all the sufferings of the world is still really a gift. And it's not to say that we have to take on the responsibility to save the world. You know, I think that's very far-fetched. We're not going to save the world. But what we can do is stay awake. We can do what's in front of us. You know, we can have a generous flavor to our lives in how we treat the people around us and how we cultivate community. But I think, you know, it's so easy for us to forget about ourselves. You know, it's so easy for us to dive into people pleasing and helping others. And we tend to forget about ourselves. It's a very good escape.
That's me.
It's a lot of us. It's a perfect way to avoid looking at ourselves. You know, some people will drink. I call a good friend of mine who started this new kind of movement, really, that's happening that kind of is around, it's around sobriety, but it's not so much about kind of like having a big problem and like getting it, you know, having something dramatic happen where you had to stop drinking. It's more about what is your habit, your daily habit? What are your dimming habits? That's what she calls them. It's called the clear life journey.
Okay.
And these things that we do to dim ourselves, drinking, you know, scrolling on social media, you know, any of these things that we do that take us away out of what's in front of us, busyness, you know, just being busy to be busy, takes us away from this life, this gift, this human experience. And the thing that is not encouraged in our culture is any sort of stillness or prayer or meditation. Because it's not, you know, it's not super dramatic, you know, but it really is. It's about one of the most punk rock things you can do is to just sit with your own thoughts and just sit with like a mountain and see that you have the capacity to have a reprieve from this life in a way and just sit and be aware of this body and to experience how nice it is not to have to constantly react to the judgments, the critiques, the chatter of the mind that usually tends to be so negative, especially for us in the Western culture. You know, we're very hard on ourselves.
My friends, I want to interrupt this podcast just for 30 seconds to say that if you made it this far and up until this point, you haven't taken the time to either subscribe to the podcast or follow it on whatever platform you're listening on, to please do so. And if you have been enjoying this episode and previous episodes leading up to this one, to please go and rate and review. It helps a ton. And it only allows me to do a better job at producing these episodes for you and potentially getting more guests that can, yeah, provide some amazing insight. So with that being said, thank you so much and back to the episode.
Yeah, we're extremely hard on ourselves. And it seems like our culture continues to instill behaviors that say that we should be even harder, that we need to be better. And it leads to, for example, for me, one of the things that, I suffer with this extreme sense of responsibility where I beat myself up if I'm unable to meet these completely irrational standards where I even portray a savior persona where I think I can fix people. I think I can save people. And it's so detrimental, not only to others, but especially to oneself, because it's it's completely unattainable. And I think those moments of stillness are huge. I had moments in my life where I've had tinnitus ringing in my ear, extreme physical pain, and feeling less because I grew up as an athlete, and then all of a sudden losing my identity because I couldn't move the way that I used to move. I mean, it's expressed itself in so many different ways, but stillness has definitely helped. Meditation has been a big one. But getting to the point of developing a practice around stillness was very hard for me. And I assume people who come to your retreats and your workshops, they're ready for a change. In your daily life,
you, a lot of like type A personalities, you know, we have a very broad economic diversity component kind of woven into it. So it's not just a place for rich people at all. You know, we give out an immense amount of scholarships or partial payment and things like that to it. But people roll in there a lot of times not ready. But over the last 5 years, I've been able to, I have my own little technique now that I'm able to weave them into these practices. And I can't even tell you how many people I've gotten to start a practice, you know. Yeah. And I understand how hard it is. And you just have to take a moment and think about how you've been living and how many years you've been living like that and the conditioning that is in that. So of course, being out in front of yourselves, living like that, achieving, you know, all of this stuff, the acquiring and all of these things, when we start to slow down, of course, it's going to be uncomfortable. Why would it not be uncomfortable? You know what I mean? So, and this is because, and we think that we should be able to do it like, you know, 30-day challenge or anything, any of these like kind of, you know, really kind of irresponsible ways to promote any sort of stillness. You know, when you've had 20 years of being out in front of yourself and just providing for your family, paying mortgage, a job that's, you know, 70 hours a week, raising kids, and you like, oh, you know, look inward. Of course, you're going to be like very agitated. But I'm always here to say that we have the capacity to do this. It's not about finding any sort of peace or bliss. That can happen, and those are the gifts of it. But what it is, like I said earlier, a reprieve from the daily life that we lead, and to just have what I would call healthy solitude for ourselves, to just see what we're dealing with, you know. And I can speak from my own practice. I sit in the morning, and I've been doing this for a very long time now. And my approach to it is I just do it like anything else. You know, we jump in the shower and we wash this body. We do these hygienic things. We brush our teeth. You know, we lotion our bodies. We fix our hair. We prepare our food, we eat, we do all these things that we don't really contemplate it that much. We do it. And I kind of lump my meditation practice in that. I have a little altar and things like that, but like most of the time I just get up and I sit. You know, I don't make it any more than it needs to be, you know. And this is from kind of the Vipassana world, which really lends itself very beautifully to, I don't know why those balloons come. Did you see those?
Neither did I know where those balloons came from, but right when you said Vipassana, it was like,
it does it with my Zoom calls too. Well, anyways,
that's amazing.
As soon as I start thinking about the fact that I need to go and meditate, I start to find something else to do. It's really easy to do that. As soon as I start thinking about it, well, you know, I really should do my laundry, you know, or I really should clean the grout in the bathroom. Anything to not sit with myself. I just do it. It's like you don't really contemplate too much that you're going to brush your teeth. You just kind of do it. You make it part of one of your daily practices. The hygiene of our inner world is important to check in with. We do the hygiene of our outer world here, the body, for the most part. But like to have the time and space to be like, I'm carrying some sadness. You know, I'm carrying some sadness right now, or I'm grieving about something. And it could be something, you know, it could be, you know, I really miss my father. You know, something like that. Like I haven't, you could say like somebody who lost their father 10 years ago and all of a sudden you feel it kind of coming up. Or it could be I'm carrying something, I'm carrying some anger, you know, and to be aware of that before you enter the day. So that if you're aware of this, you're not going to pop off to the people close to you because they're the ones who usually get in front of it. They get the like, I feel sad, help me. I, you know, or they get you being snarky or pop off quickly because you're angry about something that has totally nothing to do with them. So this, do you see where I'm going here? This just
100%. And I can relate. I can relate wholeheartedly. And I've seen this in myself and in others and people that I work with. And one of the things that happens to me is that when I start to drop off of my stillness or meditation practice, it becomes even harder for me to go back because when I try to sit or I say, okay, today I'm going to sit, I go into the inner world and I'm like, I don't want to be here. This is way too chaotic for me. And it feels like I'm out of control even more than I am when I am conscious and doing other things. So I start to resist it. But I know that when I allow myself to pay attention to the chaos, somehow the chaos becomes self-organizing. It just kind of works itself out. And I guess this is the magic of the inner workings. And it's a cleansing mechanism, just like maybe dreaming is or sleeping is like you said, grooming. I relate wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I love you calling it a cleansing mechanism because it is. It's not that like, wow, you know, you do your 20 minutes. That's what I mostly do daily. You do your 20 minutes and it's not that like I feel really great after my meditation. Sometimes I do or whatever, but the benefits of my meditation present themselves throughout the day in the way I relate to the world. So I'll catch myself in certain things because I'll go into the day where I'm pretty used to some level of contentment in my life now. Doesn't mean that it's always like that, but there's kind of something that I've been able to establish that I certainly did not have in my old life, you know, in the very forward momentum, ego-driven life, you know, where I don't need to be right so often, you know? So I'll let some arguments go where in the past I would just be, it's like, you know what? You can have that, you know? But it can swing totally the other way, which I've experienced also, where I started to not stick up for myself. And that became a problem. I had to kind of people were telling me, they're like, you need to get your fire back. You know,
I love this. Teddy, this is big because you've been a professional athlete. You've done hard work in film production where everything is based on a budget and a timeline and you need to get shit done and you need to be reliable, that it requires a fire. How does one have the ability to remain internally at peace, not be reactive, be responsive, and to pick their battles? And I'm using the word battle right now because I'm kind of thinking about being you know, on fire or ready or have that edge. How does one find that balanced? Or maybe it's not even a balance, maybe it's just knowing when to act and trusting one's instincts there. I'm not sure. Where does your mind go when I share this?
Yeah, so I think we start to develop a skill as to how we're going to lead our own lives. Like, you know, we're responsible for our own energy, you know. Nobody else is responsible for our own energy and how we share that energy or how we not share it. And the gateway, the door that opens as to how to, like, to just have some sense of, like, confidence in that I'm doing this the right way is really through stillness. Because what happens here is it allows us the opportunity of this kind of, we have a lot of knowledge, and look at all the content. Like, we're able to get questions answered so quickly. We don't, you know, so many things are done for us in this modern age, and more things will be done for us with the advent of this, the whole AI technology now. So when we do sit, it's an opportunity for our own innate wisdom to come to the surface in a way, because it's never really allowed to come up when we kind of think we know it all, when we're just full of knowledge and facts and these kind of like book smart things. You need to earn wisdom. You need to earn wisdom. And the only way it's really earned is by sitting quietly with oneself. And I'm talking about a wisdom that exists that's so closely tied to compassion that they're really one and the same. So it's not like wisdom knowledge, which is more sharp-edged, very, you know, kind of hard, and it could be set in belief systems. It could be it's set in this thing of knowing, you know. But what we start to see is that nothing is really knowable. You know, there's certain things that we know that the moon will rise tonight and the sun will rise tomorrow. But there's not a lot that's totally knowable. Even scientific proofs have been, you know, unproven in our lifetime, in yours and mine, you know. So, you know, I came from a science background, and I was very, in my early 20s, of being very steadfast in knowing. And if you did not believe the way I did, in a way, I would just think you're like dumb or something. You know what I mean? Like, now I've like really swung this whole other way of like the mystery of all of this. The mystery of having a human experience, and to be that way, I'm open to be able to receive, you know, new ways of thinking, new ways of relating to the world around me as it becomes so fast, you know. I'm circling around. What was the initial question again?
I think you said it. That it's finding your edge, but still having the inner peace and the ability to be responsive rather than reflexive and reactive. And yeah. I think you brought up something very powerful here, which is this idea of wisdom, which is different than knowing.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. I think that is something that for a person who maybe finds their identity in being the one who knows and who does and accomplishes and continues to win the competition of life, so to speak, according to the rules that we've made up as a society, I think that there can be hardship found there. And I guess this is where suffering comes into play. And I assume that you, through some suffering in your life, whether it was through professional skateboarding, navigating sobriety, and other aspects of your life, you've probably in a way benefited from suffering. because it's enlightened you in a way. If that is true, what have been those moments for you that you can look back and say, okay, these were inflection points that mark the wisdom that I have today, even though it's still unfolding? Yeah. What were those moments for you, and how did they play out for you at this moment?
Yeah, definitely getting sober 25 years ago was a big one. It gave me a whole new life in a way, you know. It evoked more of my spiritual side for sure. It gave me the courage to change things up a little bit easier. But a little bit down the road of my sobriety, a couple years down the road, I got very addicted to work. So I was very addicted to that production stuff we talked about. And to the point where, and this is the important thing, of the detriment of my own body. And it was a really interesting time because my spiritual life was evolving. And then I had this crazy production life. And it was like production was feast or famine. It was like work a lot, make a lot of money, have some time off. It was a big yo-yoing of a lifestyle. But then I had this, like, my mindfulness meditation practice was, that's what I was doing. I was like working hard and working a lot, making a bunch of money. Then I would go on a long extended retreat. And that's all I was doing. And I was like, there was no equanimity. It was like two polar opposites. And I got shingles at 40, pretty young, you know. It started, yeah. I was on my way with my surfboard, driving from the Bay Area, going to Long Beach. I was going to surf in Huntington a couple days. I was driving to go see the Dalai Lama. And my forehead felt weird right here. And I was always already burned out. I was so used to feeling burned out. I didn't know how. I thought I was okay. I was just used to kind of just always feeling depleted. And I was driving and I was just like, what is this? This feels weird. And I just had a weird feeling. And I turned around in San Jose and went back to the city where I was living at the time. And the next morning I woke up and I had these little blisters around my eye. And I was just like, what is this? And went to the doctor and they're like, shingles. You have shingles, you know? And
wow.
Total adrenal burnout, you know. I was still doing my yoga practice and all of that stuff, sitting, but it was just my lifestyle. My body was telling me, dude, you gotta really change something here. And so I was immersed in my spiritual life in a way, but it was like my body could not handle this kind of back and forth anymore. That's what I kind of attribute. I needed some sort of, not so much feast or famine, but just some steadiness, you know?
Sorry, yeah, that's a big one. I know a lot of athletes who are very unhealthy. I know a lot of yoga practitioners who are very unhealthy.
Sure.
And I know a lot of people who claim to have a spiritual practice and behave in ways that are very unhealthy. So yeah. What are we missing? Right. And I think it's the relationship to our practices. And there's something there that is so subtle, so elusive. Could you help us get a grasp for what it is that you have found through these moments, like getting shingles and saying something needs to change here?
Yeah.
What is that? Is it a feeling? Is it a thought? Is it a process? Is it everything?
I feel like, you know, whenever we finally change something, nobody and no tool or no system is really going to get you to do it until you really want to do it. You know, any sort of big change, because we also like our own suffering a bit too, you know, and it's only until it brings you to your knees is when you're just like, okay, I will entertain the unknown here and figure out a whole new way of living or entertain something new. And it's different for everybody, but it does, you know, the way MEA really helps people, I feel like, is and the work that I do and that we do there with the rest of the faculty is that we just give them the spaciousness to entertain something new. And it's not really, there's statistics and there's different studies done on certain things and we can offer that. But I feel like more than anything of just being in the natural world a bit, of coming and just being in your body, not really doing much, but being in it and being aware of it and the felt sense and the feeling into your body and moving it a little bit, reacquainting it with the movement without any judgments. But I think, you know, you decide to make a change when you decide to make a change. I mean, it's just as simple as that. It's nobody is going to tell you, you know, it's interesting. Like AA really helped me in a lot of ways, but it also was like when I started to go out in the world and teach these mindfulness practices, I would see that people were just as strung out as I was. And they're just working themselves to death. Like, yeah. You're not really, you know, they're doing something in our culture that is actually rewarding them in a way.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a big one. Sorry for interrupting there, Teddy, yeah. But I think that's a big one. We're all mirrors of each other and a reflection of each other. And something that I was just thinking about as you were saying this, I remember listening to Ram Dass, and Ram Dass said something like, if you listen to all my tapes and all my lectures, you will become as neurotic as I am.
Sure. I mean, that's such a beautiful, I love, you know, those are the teachers that just emanate authenticity. You know, people will roll into MEA and it's like, God, you're so calm. And like, I'm not. Like, I'm just like you, you know, I sit down every morning and I get to see how, you know, it's not even really crazy mind. It's a luminous mind, you know, it's like, and people like, it really is, you know, I really try to watch the words that I use too, because it's easy for us to just go, oh, I'm so crazy. Like, that's not a good thing to call ourselves, right? You know, it's like, I know it's done with a light touch and kind of a joke and things, but like the mind, it's not crazy. It's just luminous and it's thinking and it's doing what it's supposed to do. You know, people will say, I don't meditate because I think too much. Well, we all think a lot. We all have very, very active minds. And I talk about this almost every week at MEA. That the Dalai Lama, I'm sure, would say that he has a very active mind, but he has figured out a way to have a relationship with his mind. And he's also, you know, he talks about this quite often, is that he doesn't believe everything his mind tells him. You know, and in my own sobriety, both with working too much and with alcohol and drugs, is that I had to develop another place to go for information that I could really rely on. And that meant going here. What is my body telling me? My mind will tell me all sorts of things that are like not really good for me, you know? So I'm able to kind of see that and not take it so seriously. And this goes for, like, I think for most of us, our inner critic stuff, you know, is it really true? That's one of my mantras that I say quite often throughout the day. Is it really true that I'm not good enough? You know, is it really true that this person that I just made a judgment about, when I don't even know what they're going through or anything, right? But I made a judgment. Is it really true that that's the way they are? It's not. It never usually is. Like, almost 99% of the time, what this chatter is like, it's not super useful. But what's useful is when I can, the feeling, that that intuition, the gut feeling about certain things, you know? And it's not encouraged enough in the culture that you and I were raised in, for the most part. It's like, you know, being 20 years old, and it's like coming from a family that might have some, you know, a connection to a good job, which is perfectly fine. But like, you're like, I really want to be a musician. Like, I've been playing guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be a musician. And it's like, family, friends, this is really good. You'll be set for da 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 da. And it's so often in our lives, we take the safe road, you know? Yeah. And yeah, by the time we get to midlife, we're done with it. We're just like, God, I did everything right. And I'm still really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that they haven't done is looked at themselves, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully for me, my experience growing up was slightly different. I was a very anxious kid. My first memory was one of fear and loss. And I remember learning about death and how scary that was. I was maybe 3, 4, 5. Those are my first vivid memories of this just intense feeling of chaos. Thankfully, my mother was able to really hold space for me. And I remember her teaching me relaxation techniques as I was growing up, and how to meditate. And yeah, I never chose the traditional path.
Yeah.
But it's interesting now. I'm 41. So I'm going through somewhat of a midlife crisis where I'm asking myself, is it time for me to do the responsible thing that society tells me to do? And yeah, having some dissonance there. So I guess we all have to go through it. And I'm curious, what are some of the techniques that you teach for stillness or accessing stillness? I know you have the sound bowl. Are those tools that you utilize? Maybe we can do that right now. That's something that maybe you can share how you would utilize a tool like that.
Why don't we end here with a short, we'll do 3 minutes if you'd like.
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. And I'll just walk us through kind of a mindfulness meditation, Vipassana type meditation. And I encourage all of you that are out there watching this just to entertain this idea of entertaining some stillness. So we'll go ahead and start here with the ring of the bell. And to just take a seat, to just take a moment and put everything down. To softly close your eyes. And to start with just recognizing this body that you're in. To recognize the simple fact that we're in this wondrous, marvelous container that has really been so, so good to us, to allow us to have a human experience. But to start to use your awareness, just your awareness, to feel into the body itself, to really feel into the body, the felt sense. So we're not so much thinking about the body conceptually, we're starting to let that awareness wash over the body into the inner parts of the body, and to expand back out to the surface of the skin, so that we start to experience the wholeness, to experience this body all at once. the physicality of this body in time and space, and to use the physical nature of this body, the weight of the body, to help us ground. So we feel the body seated in the cushion or the chair that we're sitting in. The feet are flat upon the ground. And we feel the support that's being offered right here at this moment. Not by anybody or anything, but just by recognition of this body and the relationship of this body with the earth itself. The ground beneath us, always there, always has been there. And to see that we can use the weight of the body to feel the support, and everything that's being offered. All the bare essentials that we need to keep this life sustained. The air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat, all provided by the earth. So we see most times than not that our needs are met. And this allows us to simplify and to bring our awareness into the gentle ebb and flow of this body breathing. And with each breath itself, a reminder that we're a part of something much bigger than just ourselves. The interconnectedness in the evidence of this body breathing, the symbiotic relationship that we have with the plants around us, the plants, the way they breathe, our bodies, the way they breathe, both in this wonderfully perfect system of sustaining life. And as we focus on the in-breath as the in-breath, the out-breath as the out-breath, the compassionate nature of that process, the softening of the tummy, the relaxing of the shoulders, and in a sense, breathing in a sense of compassion and letting that compassion fill this body and expand throughout this body. And that compassion, just like everything else in this world, shared in the form of an exhale, this wholehearted action of letting go into the next moment, an offering of oneself, an awakenness to literally bear witness to all that this life has to offer. All the riches and the abundance and all the suffering and everything in between. We can bring our hands to prayer in front of the heart center. May all beings find their own natural rhythm. May all beings continue to recognize this foundation of joy that comes with this human experience. May all beings drop into grace. May all beings be free of suffering. And for all of us to have some time and space to look and rest within this body, to connect with our own innate wisdom. So to offer that wisdom back out into the world in the form of compassion. And we do this in the way that we live our lives. Namaste.
That was wonderful. Teddy, thank you so much. This was a beautiful way to end it, but yeah. I feel like we just started.
I'm happy to come back anytime. It's been wonderful chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and there's so much to uncover, and I'm glad these conversations can be had, and I'm thankful for the work that you do, and I look forward to meeting you in person and learning from you, and hopefully everybody listening got to experience a little dose of what you do and who you are in the world.
Yeah, there's a lot here. I encourage anybody who kind of resonated with any of these things, these transitions or whatever, to look at what we're doing here at MEA Wisdom is the name of our website. And then my name is Teddy Dean with an I. I'm pretty active on my Instagram. I'm in the middle of changing my website right now. You can check it out, but it's teddydean.com. And you can find me most of the time down here in the beautiful world of Baja California and the wonderful country of Mexico.
Wonderful. Well, I'll put all that information in the description so people can access it. Teddy, enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your week, and thank you for your time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Carl.
Thank you.
This is the Freestyle Way.